power of our diplomacy. Diplomacy.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a really big deal.
The strength of our diplomacy.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
It does sound fun.
Six, five, four.
But so I want to play this game so bad.
One. Deadline.
You are listening to episode 32 of Diplomacy Cast. Diplomacy Cast is a podcast about the board game Diplomacy. My name's Eric Mead. That's Nathan Barnes.
I'm still here for some reason.
And joined in studio today by Matt Shields. Hi, Matt.
In studio.
Yeah. That's exactly where
we are.
Right,
this
now
is an exclusive
a studio.
Nice to be here.
Yeah. We realized it had been too long since Matt had been on our show. Matt, purveyor of all things random and
You didn't really have a plan going into this sentence, did you?
No, I'm getting there, though.
Good.
Well,
good.
We used him in the past, as you may recall, to just show up and talk about extremely random or obscure points of diplomacy, which is not what we're going to do today.
Yeah, so it was high time that we did the thing that we hadn't done before.
Yeah. Great. That's correct.
That's right. All right, so what are we going to talk about today?
Today, we are going to finally catch you guys up on fantasy diplomacy.
Fantasy diplomacy!
Getting hot and heavy in the world of fantasy diplomacy.
And almost done.
And almost done, right. With one tournament to go, anybody's game, except really not anybody's game at all, even slightly, unless something amazing happens at Carnage. But we'll get there. And then we are going to take a suggestion from an email that we had in our last episode, that we liked so well, we decided to make a show out of it.
Yeah, exactly. And we're going back to power plays. Power plays. That's going to be actual strategy, guys. I know you've been waiting for it.
The subject was how to approach a tournament if it's your first tournament and nobody knows you.
Being a new player, what should new players do? And as a corollary.
We decided to roll with it and go, what should you do when you've got somebody who it's their first tournament and nobody knows them?
Yeah.
How do you play against that person?
We're gonna talk about that. A lot of stuff is going to be familiar to some people, but I really hopeful that connect with some of the newer players out there. I know we have a lot of listeners who are newer looking to set up some games around there, so this is good stuff to have.
It seemed like a good Matt subject, too. So
yeah,
we decided to roll with it. If you have any questions or any feedback or any emoticons that you would like to share with us, there are many ways that you can.
I would try Facebook.
Emoticons.com/diplomacy.
Tried
to throw me a curveball.
Uh-huh.
It was right on that.
I know. It was
about
all
the middle
it
for a single.
Yep.
And you could also send us email at diplomacycast@gmail.com.
Super works. Not the best turnaround time, but super works.
Yeah.
We always get there eventually.
It sits in our mailbox for a while, and then we either answer it or don't.
So it gets, that's where it ripens.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an important part of the
like
process.
Like a fine wine, like the one that we are drinking right now.
Exactly, as promised.
Yep. After this, fantasy diplomacy. And a couple other miscellaneous things.
Boom. Fantasy diplomacy.
Yeah.
People have been clamoring about it.
Have they?
Yeah.
There's been clamoring.
There's been clamoring.
Well,
people have been asking me.
Well, would you give the quick once over if you don't know what fantasy diplomacy is, because you haven't been listening to the show that long. Welcome.
Yeah, it's a little something that it's really Eric's brainchild, and we have 16 teams, is it?
Yeah,
16 teams. Each team is held by one diplomacy player. They've selected a team of three diplomacy players. We basically track their Grand Prix scores, add them together, and then have some little pixie dust of modifiers of best countries and best stabs.
Yeah,
and you got to be in the top seven, etc.
The same as Grand Prix.
Yeah, it's a little bit different, and so this is our third update, second official, I think. Third, we unofficially have updated in the past, but it's really. We haven't been a lot of tournaments. So last time, I think our last update, there was only two tournaments done. So what were the other tournaments?
Yeah, so since then, there's been, pretty much the entire tournament year. We have had some TempleCon? TempleCon, okay. Yeah. Some DixieCon, the World Championship. Big numbers there. Weaselmoot. Boston Massacre, which
was Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Boston Massacre.
Not so much with
in
Boston.
Philadelphia. Yeah. Well, the Philadelphia Massacre doesn't make any sense. Wait, get the dome back. Let's sort this out. Tempest just finished last weekend. Hot off the. No, I won't say that. That's fine. But we have the scores and stuff, or most of them, anyway. So, since the year's almost over, there's some people that we don't feel the need to call them out for their drafting strategy, though it may have included drafting Nathan Barnes, which fine, or Matt Shields for that matter.
Bad idea.
Or taking me as your number one, your first round draft pick. Yeah, that actually, really, if you drafted any of the three of us, you're eliminated. and there's some other ones. We don't need to call them out specifically. Let's go top seven. Let's go top seven here, and we'll let the drama build.
Yeah, I like it.
Can you feel it?
So, yeah, I can feel it. So, who's number seven?
Seventh place, 450, almost 454 points. Mr. Brian Sheldon, whose team was Andy Bartolone, Ike Porter, Tim Richardson. Some powerful pick-kisser nonsense there.
I was just searching for another P to put at the end of that. Your Parsifal is kind of dangling.
I put it down. Sixth place. Roland Cook, who owns Brian Sheldon. Also Adam Silverman. Indeed. And Kevin O'Donnell.
Yeah. Yep. How many points do they have?
522, so you guys can see the spread. Dave Malecki, who's tried so hard to shoot the moon.
Yeah,
so
he's tried really hard.
So hard.
But he's still, somehow, he's tried to shoot the moon, and yeah, he's coming in there at fifth place.
Fifth place, 576 points. He owns himself, of course. Tom Coburn and Robert Roos. So nice. He's earning score from all over the place. He's yeah. Nate Cockrell.
Number four,
His team includes Eddie Bersan, Andrew Goff, and Larry Peary. Almost shot the moon.
Almost.
Way back when. Yeah.
That was whack.
Jim O'Kelly.
I'm coming to one of the top three now.
Top three, and with starting to put a little distance here, 739 points. Matt Sundstrom, John Grimila, Graham Woodring.
Is his Chicago team. In there.
Yeah, yep. 739 and three quarters.
So the spread between fourth place and third place is, what, 100 points? More?
Mm-hmm.
A little more than 100 points.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
The next team is
Steve McKim?
Steve McKim.
I want to keep on calling
him. I always mispronounce his name. I wanted Matt to do it.
Second place.
Second place, but only by 6 points. Jim O'Kelly has, on his Steve 739 has. Points, Steve has 745 points. But Steve owns Jim O'Kelly in his fantasy, which is working pretty well for him. Also, Robert Primus and...
Peter McNamara
from Australia. That's right. That's
Australian
right.
Peter McNamara.
Yeah. Yes. It's always so confusing.
Now, so those guys have a on chance Twitter of some, if their Peter teams McNamara. Do something amazing at Carnage, maybe, and there's a lot of people at Carnage and that kind of thing. But we, right now,
this
have
is
kind yes. of a runaway.
With the spread between the top place and second place is over.
Like
200 points.
Yeah, 230.
So are we calling this now? Is it too early in the evening to call this?
It is. Yeah, no, I mean.
I want there to be some suspense. And
the suspense we have left is naming who's in first place.
Yeah, that's right.
It's 9:43 Eastern time.
Yeah, and, we're calling it.
We're calling this.
Yeah. Probably Ike Porter will be our Fantasy Diplomacy winner, earning himself a guest appearance on the podcast, which will be a real treat to to schedule. Ike is one of the... Everybody loves Ike. He's awesome. But actually pinning Ike down and getting him to actually be on the show is going to be, well, he has to come collect his prize.
We got our work cut out for us. Yeah.
His team is Chris Martin, Jan Kluwe, Brian Ecton.
With a grand total of 976 points. 77 points, really, almost.
Wow.
That is just a dominating lead.
Ike Porter, you are not listening to this, but if you were listening to this, we would tell you to start celebrating now.
Yeah, it seems really unlikely that because really the only chance, like, even close enough, even would be Jim O'Kelly and
Steve McKeown.
Yep. Those are the ones that are close. It's possible, but we're talking about 200 points.
Let's see. So
who's on their teams? Who's on Jim and Steve's teams?
Robert
Primus, if you're listening to this, you have to go to Carnage.
Robert Primus is listening to this.
Yeah. Steve McKeown needs you. So
yeah. And now Jim O'Kelly, you could not go to Carnage to attempt. It gets really confusing. But wow. There you go.
That's the update.
That sounded more exciting in my head than it actually did when we just read a bunch of numbers off a spreadsheet. But we're done with it.
No, it's good, guys. We'll be curious about what kind of feedback everybody has. You know, as far as we know, we haven't heard a ton about people's play kind of changing because of Fantasy Diplomacy. We kind of secretly hoped for it, but I think, you know, after... I think...
Actually, speaking
of stern words, I heard.
Yeah,
stern words are good. If there is a moon shooting bonus that I should be aware of at any of those last five tournaments and didn't factor in, it's possible I got this wrong.
That's true.
I don't think anybody shot the moon who's on anybody's fantasy team this year, but if somebody on your team shot the moon... Now's your chance.
Yeah, you need to let us know. Let us know how this kind of went. And we're actually really curious about any experiences people had on the board that related to this. Because we decided about whether or not to do it next year. And if, you know, everybody seemed, we had a positive response.
Only next year with a $10,000 buy-in, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Winner takes all.
Winner takes all, yeah. And the $10,000 would... be real dollars.
We do those like online drafts with like fantasy football. Everyone logs in at the same time.
That's your department. That's I don't know how that works.
That is not my department.
Oh, okay.
That is not my department.
So the point being, give us the feedback, guys. If you want to see this again, if you want to see some changes, if you want to see whatever, you need to let us know. Otherwise, it's going to do that thing that everything happens when no one pays attention to it, which is slowly fade away.
Yep. Nathan had one quick shout out, something to do with a tournament.
Oh, yeah, there was one tournament that's not on here. Well, a couple of things.
Yeah.
This is interesting in this context because there was a tournament that... Actually, Matt should talk about it. There was a tournament in Boston.
Oh, yeah.
There was a tournament in Boston.
Yeah, there was a new tournament just this past weekend. The same weekend as Tempest, if I'm not mistaken.
Love it.
In, I want to say, Marlsboro, Massachusetts.
Okay.
I think that's the name. It's a suburb of Boston. One of our one of the players from WebDip, WebDiplomacy.net.
We like those guys.
Yeah, set up a tournament there. It's called The Bros. I'm sure you can find that if you Google it. It actually has a really nice website. He had results were already posted, so he's way, way more on the ball than most people running tournaments, apparently.
Apparently so, yeah.
And he says he's going to do it again next year. He's going to try to avoid being right on top of Tempest next time. But other than that, it sounds like it was a really good time. I'm trying to find a couple people who are there to... Get some feedback. If you're on the Massachusetts dip list, I think there was some chatter about it on there.
It's like a fight club. Like I heard there was one in Massachusetts this weekend. It's so great. I love it.
No, it's good. And I, also not on here, well, I don't know if they haven't held any tournaments yet, but we've gotten a lot of feedback from a couple of people have emailed us. Apparently LA, they have a new meetup group. They're kind of growing right now. They're holding games. I think in the last 2 months, they've had three or four diplomacy games.
Yeah.
And so that in various cities in Southern California. So I wanted to kind of elevate that for anybody that's out there in those areas. Reach out because there are people trying to get tournaments together and trying to grow this community down there. So,
but the LA group is in good hands.
Yeah.
There are experienced tournament people who are guiding things along, and so I anticipate going to a tournament there any day now.
And a bunch of new people, it sounds like, too. So
get to it, guys. Yeah, exactly.
So be good.
No, there's a hobby.
And we might have somebody come on and chat a little bit about that pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
Just to get straight from the dog's mouth, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Horse's mouth, not dog's mouth. I don't think you get things from dogs. Well, you get something from dog's mouth, like rabies, but you can't really get
it. Doesn't seem safe to try and get stuff out of a dog's mouth.
Yeah, unlike a horse.
Unless it's
which
like
is
the dog
a
really
much more reasonable
want.
Place to get. I mean,
well, horses,
there's a lot more space in there to hold news. It makes sense.
Their
but
teeth
a dog,
are dull. We can agree that a horse's teeth are dull.
Yeah,
at least.
The suckers will bite.
Yeah.
Hard.
All right.
Okay.
I actually don't know whether that's true. I don't think I've ever seen a horse.
All right. So, hey, that.
On this note,
we're going to talk about...
Oh.
We're going to go ahead and talk about our power plays.
Yep. Power plays. Here we go.
Power plays.
Power plays.
Power plays.
I feel like it's not quite proper to start power plays as Nathan is taking pictures of a kitty. But that is actually where we're starting this.
Two kitties.
Power play.
Power plays. Extreme. Kitty
in the
picture.
Studio. In the studio today, we have a couple of cats.
Yeah,
that,
like always.
Are living here.
Our
in the
ever rotating cast of cats.
Yeah, I know it's part of the. It gets the show amped up. And anyway, these particular cats have various disabilities and are piled in the same bed, looking like furry.
Extra toes isn't a disability.
Yes, it is.
All right. We'll be posting pictures of those instead of this episode coming up sometime soon.
It's gonna be rad.
Now, onto our
power plays. No, this is a really super interesting topic. I wish I remembered the name of the person that mentioned it to us. But new players. I think it's helpful to have like a little guide. Mm-hmm. A little, like, here's a couple of things, maybe four or five things. If you're a new player, come to a tournament. Try to ask these questions. Have this attitude. Like, take this approach.
Yep.
And that's super helpful.
We thought we would do it both ways because that seemed more like you don't have to be a new player to be listening to this and be interested in the subject. And so we're going to kind of take it from both sides, maybe concurrently, maybe consecutively. Yeah. We'll find out once we get there. So where to start?
I sort of think that the biggest barrier, and we've talked about this before, is sort of the, I don't know anybody thing. Yeah. So, there's the in-club, et cetera, et cetera. And I think the best way to, best advice to new players as to what is it that to kind of overcome this problem is really just be willing to call people. If you're confused about something, just call them on it. Just be like, I'm new. I don't know what Key Lepanto is. Or just don't. I think there's a part of the community, that barrier that keeps you out, which is all just jargon. Just all that half talk that we talk about. Mm-hmm. That's a really good thing to just make the person you're talking to as a new player, the person you're talking to, aware that you might not know that.
Yep. And, if you do, that's fine too. Because there's another subset of people who have never been to a face-to-face tournament but have played more diplomacy than all of us put together, probably, just played it online.
Yeah, definitely.
Sure.
And that's fine too. But, don't be overwhelmed by the jargon, I suppose, is one first point. Saying I'm new, people are going to figure it out.
Probably, yeah.
Right?
I want to just be very specific because I think what I'm trying to say is I'm giving explicit permission that it's okay and encouraged to say I'm confused or I'm not quite sure what you're saying, because that's kind of the hurdle, right? If you go two rounds, two seasons, and you kind of don't know what you're talking about, but you kind of feel like you shouldn't ask and you should know, or like somebody's just giving you attitude about like, oh, you don't know this, blah, blah, blah. Like,
First of all, attack that person.
But I think that if you're really trying to get past those barriers, it's people don't know. We don't know we're doing it. We're just so used to it.
Right.
We just how we talk. It doesn't occur to us. Or if it does, we're like, new guy. Well, whatever. Blah, blah, blah. So I think it's important to acknowledge that that's out there, and to say if you're a new player, just be get in front of it. Just
And I guess maybe we ought to split this up a little bit into if you're a new player or if you're not a new player, but it's your first tournament.
Oh, okay. Yes. I was from a new tournament sort of perspective, but I guess you're right.
Yeah. A lot of people have played with their friends. A lot of people have played online. It's the first time that they're coming to a tournament. And you are going to know some of that stuff. What you're not going to know is the people. And that's, I guess, maybe the next part of it that's worth talking about. So where do we start there? I guess we were all there once, right?
Sure. I remember it. It was not awesome.
Yeah.
It kind of blew.
I'd played a few games online. I'd played a lot with my friends. When I finally went to my first tournament, I'd played a couple of house games with, like, Nathan and Matt and people, and they were like, you should come to a tournament sometime, and so I did that. But then maybe I don't count as the person that I didn't know anybody when I went there. But
do you remember your first tournament? Like,
what went through? It was, you were the tournament director at it, so yeah.
Wow.
Probably.
I don't remember that. Okay.
Yeah, it was in Portland.
Okay.
Well, it must have been a piggyback.
It was back when there was piggyback.
Did you know the players there? Did you know?
Not, a couple of you.
Okay.
I remember the games really well because it was my first tournament. Yeah, you and Jeff Dwornicki carved me up like I have never been carved up before on one of those boards. And then I went to bed early and woke up the next morning and found out that you had stabbed for the solo. And I was at least a little bit pleased about that. I remember that very clearly because I was like, well, I died in 1903 and I was in bed by 10. But whatever, Nathan stayed up all night and then soloed on his ally. That's fun at least.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. But
what I do remember is not really being sure whether whether to say it's my first tournament or whether to just pretend that I'd been there for years.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
I opted to pretend that I'd been there
and
for years.
And I think it's totally natural.
And I fooled nobody.
I don't think that's right. I think that's wrong.
Yeah, okay.
I think own it.
Elaborate? Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta own it.
Well, yeah, I mean, because... I mean, I don't know. I mean, to this day, I think learning as much as you can about the other people in the game, like who else on this board, is super useful. I mean, I still to this day, in like spring of one at a tournament, when I first start talking to people, like the first thing I ask them about is not, hey, what are you going to do with your pieces? Mm-hmm. It's, hey, that guy playing Germany, do you know him? Who's that guy?
It's my guy.
I mean, and part of it's just like an icebreaker anyway, just kind of casual conversation. Hey, what's going on? Hey, I'm Matt. How's it going?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, do you know, have you met that guy? What's he all about?
Yep.
And just talk about, you know, talk about what your experiences are and say, oh yeah, that guy, I played with him 5 times. That guy, I think I met him once. I forget. No idea who the hell that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And that's actually decent practical advice if you want to just start by doing that at any tournament.
Yeah.
People are familiar with that. I feel like, I mean, and maybe it's just because I played a lot of these things, but I feel like I spot newer people by the nervousness and sort of the wooden cardboardness of the entire thing. Yeah. Like, just like, hello, Russia. I am Germany. I would like to open, and they just seem like they're frozen, and they probably are nervous, honestly.
And it just should be. It's probably natural.
Yeah. In a tournament environment, if it's your first one, you're probably coming in, assuming you've played at all before, you're probably coming in saying, like, okay, this is my first tournament game. I have to play my absolute best here. And that's understandable, but at the same time, easily spottable.
And I don't know how good, I mean, how useful it is, because, I mean, I know that I used to always just try to come up with, like, these elaborate plans.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, well, the way I should do this is to come up with, like, the best, most crazy, awesomest plan and try to sell that.
Yep.
And that doesn't really work.
It doesn't really work.
No.
Yeah, that's not, you know, I think you're better off just learn as much as you can about the people.
Yeah.
Which of these guys sounds like the one I want to work with?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, right? And
it typically weirds people out, in fact, if you just walk right up. And we've probably given the advice before, like, have a plan. But don't just, like, have one plan and you're not even listening to anybody, I guess. It's okay to have a plan. It's okay to be like, you know, go talk to everybody and then be like, oh, I feel like I want to work with the Russian player here. That counts as a plan. And the thing that we've railed against in the past is don't have that plan and then change that plan 5 times in the first 5 moves.
Right.
That's the thing that gets you killed. And I know we've said that a ton of times. But, like, when we say have a plan, we don't mean sit down in your hotel room before the tournament even starts and say, here are all of the 7 countries that I might play, and here are the opening moves that I want to do.
Make a flowchart.
Yeah, don't make a flowchart.
Right. There's a difference between having a plan does not mean that you walk up with a piece of paper that has a plan on it, metaphorically, and hand it to someone else and say, this is what I want to do, let's do it.
And people do that. And they seem nervous and wooden and super intense and sweaty when they do it, and regular diplomacy players spot it. And they say, oh, okay, I don't know what's up with that guy, but he's really intense.
His plan is really weird, but I can see how I can take advantage of that. So let's go with your plan.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's excellent advice. Like, don't, if you're a brand new player, trying to, because this is what's going on. Like, you're trying to navigate this social situation, and you don't really know what's going to be there. You're going to have this extra nervousness, like, what is a diplomacy tournament? What is this?
Yeah.
And you're kind of figuring out, okay, well, what am I going to do? I guess this isn't really advice so much as just knowledge. The people that you're playing with desperately want you to play.
So, another good
they
point.
Really,
yeah.
really want you to play and come back.
Yeah.
Because if you've shown the willingness and wherewithal to get to, you know, to rearrange your life, to schlep out to some hotel or something and spend a weekend playing diplomacy, you are a valuable and rare asset. You are a diamond.
Yeah.
You are a gemstone. You are something that's to be, you know, sought after. Like, they want you there.
Once again, I remember feeling really a little bit, like, flattered/weirded out by how excited Matt and Nathan were to meet me.
And you can use this.
Oh, absolutely.
You can totally use this as a new player because these people are going to be sitting here playing a board game with you for, like, several hours. They're going to have to deal with you for several hours. If you're a person who's kind of fun to deal with, they're going to want to keep you around longer.
Right.
If you're a person who comes in and you're kind of stressing everybody out and you're kind of weird and
everyone's kind of like, I don't know how to deal with this guy. Mm-hmm. It's a lot easier to just sort of say, yeah, let's kill that guy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's just easier.
Because that guy is, I don't know how to deal with that guy. That guy's confusing me. That guy's a little weird. That guy's a little, I don't know how to deal with him. Just act like you're having a good time, even if you're not. Like,
yeah.
Definitely. People who are brand new to the game, like I learned the game earlier today when Eddie Bresson convinced me to play in this tournament.
That's different. That's a different
Those people actually are like doing, they're ahead of what we're talking about right now, because I feel like the people who have played some with their friends and this is their first tournament, or played a bunch online and this is their first tournament, mm-hmm. they come into it with this these much higher expectations, and you're a lot more wooden and a lot more intense and a lot more clammy when you're trying to like do really good at your first tournament. Whereas the people that learned earlier that day actually sometimes end up doing better because they're just like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just having a good time. What do you say? Want to be allies? All right, let's do this. And then sometimes they actually like get good results out of doing it that mm-hmm. way, or at least they'll probably totally have like one in a weekend.
Yeah.
That where everybody, for whatever reason, doesn't just go, oh, okay, it's his first game. He's never played before. Let's just kill him, you know? That's another sort of distinction between if you're brand new versus... Well, if you're brand new, you're not listening to this. Can we...
Right, right.
Yeah. Like, if you're on your way to your first diplomacy tournament, you're probably not listening to this
show. But that's still useful for knowing how to deal with that person when you encounter them, right?
Definitely.
I mean the person definitely. Who's never played before... behaves very, very differently than the person who's played a ton of games online but is coming to their first face-to-face.
Yes. So maybe I'm more focused on that one because you've played diplomas. Like, everybody who's listening to this, if you've never been to a tournament, you probably, this applies to you if you're thinking about going to your first tournament.
Yeah.
This is what it's going to be like. One thing I notice is that we're agreed on this. People who come to their first tournament having played some diplomacy and wanting to do good sometimes come off as too wooden and too intense. And you might almost just be better off being like, hey, it's my first tournament. I know some stuff about diplomacy. Let's play the personality game. Because a big difference between the face-to-face game and the online game is you don't have time to sit down and argue take 7 minutes of someone's time to argue the merits of a juggernaut over an Austria-Turkey alliance or something like that. You know, you're just like, well, you want to do this? Let's go.
Yeah, and if you've played a lot online,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to write terrible orders, right? I mean,
right?
You are capable if you've played 100 games online, if you've played 20 games online, you're capable if somebody gives you 60 seconds of just writing some like competent orders.
Yep.
So don't sweat that. You're not going to screw that part up. The part that you're going to struggle with is the figuring out these people who are here.
Yep.
And if the people will come in and spend all their time sort of staring at the board and focus on that and trying to figure out, okay, what's the plan?
Yeah.
And that's not the obstacle you're actually going to have to overcome, I don't think.
Exactly. And that's the part, unless you have anything else before it, like, that's the part that I feel like is sort of the crux of the issue. Like, how do you navigate being the person that doesn't really know anybody or doesn't really know that many people in a situation? We even talked about this with David Hill, who we interviewed in the last episode.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you navigate the part where all these people are used to just screwing each other over and being game-long allies, and they have all this history, and they, like, they have social lives in common, and they, you know, like, how do you break into that and try and do well at the game? And that's sort of the bigger and slightly touchier question, I'd say, right?
Well, I mean, that's the slightly touchier question, and I think it goes beyond the scope of what we're trying to do today to really get into... really all we want to do is have a couple of succinct sort of like, hey, be aware of this, do this, you'll be better off. And I think Matt's got, you know, Matt's, hey, don't sell, you know, have a plan, don't sell a plan.
I agree, but it's worth saying, okay, probably a lot of these people do actually know each other. They know each other's play styles.
Oh,
They've got lots of games of history. Let's talk some practical things about how you adjust to that while you're playing your game, right?
Sure. I mean, we could talk about what you. I mean, it's one and the same.
Well,
I think.
Yeah. I mean, here's one thing, and I sort of said this at the beginning, but one of the reasons you want to talk to players about the other players is it's a good opportunity. I mean, you will pick up little hints about, this guy was sort of talking garbage about this other guy, and that other guy was sort of talking garbage about that guy.
Sure.
Hey. That's really useful information.
No, it
these
actually,
guys don't seem to get along very well.
And it actually is. That's even me, who's useful, been yeah. to a million tournaments, that like sometimes I'll go to a tournament like in a region of the country where I don't know a lot of
oh, yeah.
people, and sometimes I'll be on a board and right away find out that, oh, England and Germany, those dudes can't stand each other.
Right.
Like, just by sort of opening yeah. up your ears and listening, like, and then it actually turns out to be true, and it's yeah. nobody just blowing smoke up my butt. It's like, it's literally, those guys can't stand each other, yeah. and then you just watch that unfold, that, like, how big a piece of information is that? And all you had to do was open your ears.
Yeah,
right?
and there may be, I mean, other people on the board, if there's somebody else there, I mean, they may tell you that.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll totally
some
use
third party
that.
Tells me that, yeah.
And it won't always be totally true. They may exaggerate it. They may try to right. pushing you. But, you know, talk to a bunch of people and you may be able to put this together a little bit. That, oh, okay.
Right.
There's some tension here. There's some drama here.
I've also thrown out falsely before, oh, yeah, me and so-and-so, we've never worked together. Like, I've done that just to throw them off
right, scent. Right.
Yeah.
But if I hear that from three different people, then all of a sudden it's like, okay, there's something.
Exactly.
Or if I'm hearing it from a third party who's got no particular yeah. reason to lie about that.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. So a good practical tip of just like, listen to people talk about the other personalities and be the yep. listener. And that's more of a general diplomacy. It doesn't necessarily even apply to your first tournament. Like, people will give away so much if you let them, because other diplomacy players like to talk. And
yeah,
if you
of course.
Just stand there and listen, like, you can actually get a lot of information out of people that they probably shouldn't give, just by being like, so, I'm kind of new to this scene. Have you ever played with that guy? Have you ever played with that guy? And then just climb up and let him talk.
Yeah.
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 This guy said this really weird thing. Do you think he means it? Like, what is that about?
Mm-hmm. Ah, well, yeah. I'm glad that you asked me for my expertise, because I, as a diplomacy player, super enjoy giving everyone my expertise about everything. So I will give you a deep psychological analysis of Nathan Barnes right now, because you asked.
Yeah, that's gonna be a thing. Yeah, yeah. That'll definitely happen.
Mm-hmm.
One thing, and it's kind of backpedaling a little bit, but it keeps yeah. you know, wandering around my brain, so I want to bring it back up again. The piece of advice that, and it's related to, you know, the having a plan thing and et cetera, et cetera. But yeah. the piece of advice I would really have as a new player looking at the situation and, you know, that sort of like fog of I don't know what to expect, and then you're in it in a sort of a haze of this is really intense, I don't know what I'm doing here. To your point, how do you break into this particular
yeah.
situation? The advice that I would give is, you're not going to break into this situation or do well by thinking that you're going to outsmart the other people on the board.
Mm.
You're not going to come up with a better, like, there's not a secret. You can't stare at the board and like unlock the secret move that no one sees and you know, brilliantly outdo it. And I think it's really tempting
right.
to do that, especially if you've played online a lot. You're like, because it'll happen a lot online. You'll get luckier. It's not the same.
No, online you have days and days and days to work it out. Sometimes you do come up with the long con that like wins you a game or whatever. But yeah.
And you'll end up sitting at it, and we talked about this, we mentioned this already. You'll end up sitting at the board kind of looking at it going, oh, I know it's there. I just got to stare at it a little bit longer. You're not going to outsmart anybody with your plan. That's not the game.
Right.
That's not this game at all. They're very simple sort of interactions. It can get a little bit complex, but we're not talking about higher math here. It's not very complex, yeah. and everybody who's played a couple of tournaments sees every single move.
Yeah, and even if your tactics are better, which they may well be, your tactics aren't better in 15 minutes
yeah.
when it's your first live tournament. Well, I promise. They just aren't.
If they are, they'll win out anyway.
I mean,
if your tactics are consistently better, that will shine through. Don't sweat that.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to stare at the board for 5 minutes.
I guess maybe I said it a little more bluntly than I meant to, but I will say that I've met some people who have been excellent, excellent online players, who are, you know, superior online players, way better online players than I'll ever be, who appear at tournaments for their first time, like face-to-face tournaments, and think that their stuff's just going to work the same on a 15-minute clock. And what you'll find is that there are people who might not make as good a moves as you if they have a week to think about it. But if they have 15 minutes to think about it, they'll make moves that are gooder enough that you not being used to those kinds of decisions.
Sure.
It's going to flatten out a little.
Yeah.
And so then the personality part of it becomes that much more important. Like, if you're comfortable and you're confident and you can find the right moves in 15 minutes, fine. But you're also going to need to persuade people of things in a way.
And my point in bringing this up is to really just you know, again, it's a piece of advice, something to be aware of. Like, don't, if you can, it's just something to just kind of shift your thinking on a little bit.
Yeah.
Because we're not suggesting, you know, we can talk a lot about like personalities, what you should do, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But we're just trying to get you to, you know, those first time tournament people to a place where, oh, I need to focus on my plan. And I know we're kind of being repetitions, but
I like your larger point.
I remember being there. I remember doing this exact thing. I remember sitting at tables, and just going, okay, I'm gonna get it. I got it. I got this. And then being rudely surprised.
Right. And the thing that will typically rudely surprise you isn't necessarily somebody.
I was surprised that I just didn't succeed. I was surprised at the moves.
To slice it a little finer, I mean, the thing that might surprise you would be the part where isn't necessarily the part where somebody writes orders so amazing that you're not going to realize it. It's the part where somebody takes crap on your head and makes you say thanks for the hat. It's the part where somebody is just so unbelievably persuasive that it leaves you spinning.
Yeah.
And you're not that. And it's frustrating. Yeah. And anyway.
Yeah.
Or just the part where they immediately see through all of the nonsense.
Right.
And figure out what parts of the things people are saying are actually the important bits.
Right.
And what is just garbage they can ignore.
Right.
And just like, yeah, I'm ignoring all the crap you just told me, and I'm doing it like I just said because that's obviously correct. I mean, yeah, those are the people that you're impressed by, where it's like, wow, you okay?
We're not
you figured
saying,
it out immediately.
We're not saying that tournament players are better than we're saying that tournament players are better than you at tournament diplomacy.
Yeah,
which is sort of a variant of diplomacy
where you have to get
together in this room full of people who all know each other and try and eat their children.
Another thing is really, I mean, to be fair here, like, I don't want to oversell, like, the all-know-each-other part, because it's not, I mean, there is some of that, but that theme gets oversold a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people who show up at a tournament, they feel like everyone in this room already knows each other, and that's probably not what's going on. I mean, unless you've wandered into a very specific circumstance, there's probably a bunch of people here who have not been here before. There's probably a bunch of people here who've, like, yeah, I've met that guy a couple times. But I don't really know him that well. And that guy, what's your name again? I think we played once a couple years ago, but I forget. I mean, it's more like that. It's like you've wandered into this weird, awkward cocktail party, and you have to talk to these people.
Yeah.
And
I almost always know at least one or two people on a board, but it's pretty common that four other, at least half the board.
I don't know who they are. And sometimes just having history with the people is the reason you lose, not the reason you win. So it's not even always an advantage.
Oh, no.
At all. So.
And I guess that actually is another thing, and this is probably much easier said than done.
Yeah.
But you can sort of figure out who knows, like, who has history and who knows each other and stuff by just, like, pay attention to what's happening in the room.
Yeah.
Before you even started playing.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, yeah, those two guys, they've been talking for, like, a half an hour.
Doesn't hurt.
And just like, okay, just sort of note that and put that in the back of your head.
Doesn't
you can
hurt.
Remember that. And, you know.
Or in the 5 or 10 awkward minutes when you've gotten your board call, everybody gets to their board, but they haven't started the clock for spring 1901 yet. Who's joking and ribbing each other versus who's awkwardly shaking each other's hands?
Right, yeah.
There will be a lot of awkward handshaking, but if it's me and Matt on the board, we're not going to, like, go through some sort of, like, pretense of being like, Eric Mead, Matt Shields, hey, nice to meet you.
Oh, yeah, no,
we're just going to be like, so, you and me, oh, you're France, okay, awesome, like, whatever. We're not going to pretend that we don't know each other when we actually know each other. Pay attention to that. Like, pay attention, like, there are so many little edges to be had just by, like, watching what other people do when the game's not even being played.
Okay, so hard question.
Yeah.
Are you ready to?
Jeez, Matt brought hard questions. We thought he was our guest. We're his. It's fine.
He's a co-host at this point.
Yeah.
Executive producer, I think, is the thing.
Perfect.
And your compensation reflects that.
Yeah. hard question?
You had a hard question?
Well, no, I'm just wondering if you want to, if it's time to flip that.
Oh, you want to like go to the other side of it?
Because that's the part that I don't understand how to do at all.
Oh, okay. So how do we as experienced diplomacy players deal with new players?
Right.
And is your question more how do we do it better or how do we do it more?
How should we do it?
No, it's just how do you do that? Because I am terrible at that. Yeah. I mean, literally, it's like it is actually awkward for me.
Yeah.
I'll walk in. It's like there's this guy, and I know he hasn't played before, and I know he's the one I want to work with, and I'm like. And I'll end up. I don't know how to. I seriously.
Well,
I don't even know how to phrase the question. I'm so bad at it.
Yeah.
It depends on the situation. I mean, for me, I'm not like the newbie whisperer that some people are. No. I definitely don't have that.
I used to be. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, you did. It was kind of your thing.
I don't know what happened.
I'm moderately successful at it. Yeah. So I'd say pitching, 500 or more. About half the time it'll work out, and yeah. I think the only thing that I do is just not be intimidating. Like I just do the I'm kind of fun, and let's do this thing, and usually it depends. Like if it's a new player that is doing what we've just advised you not to do, and they come to you with a crazy plan,
yeah.
Sometimes I'm just like, sure, you know what, buddy, let's do it. because what will happen is this is what almost always happens when it's successful. It's in either the East or the West. And it's me, some guy who's I know really well, who's a good player, and newbie. And the game is like, who can get the newbie? And who they, and I'm like, hey, if he has a crazy plan that goes against that guy, 100%. Even though, because I know in a little while, one or two things is going to happen. I'm going to get a slight advantage over the third player.
Yeah,
and the new player's probably going to screw up, and I'm going to be at the winning end of both of those things.
Yeah.
So even if the plan is garbage, and if it's just like, well, I'm Germany, I want to throw everything into the North Sea, and then I want to follow up by walking through you, because I want to convoy out of Gascony or something. Who knows? That's when it's successful. I'm less successful at it when, there's no pressure. There's no, like, it's just like a guy who just happens to be next to you. Like,
I don't really want to do anything. I'm just going to take the neutrals and not commit to anything.
I'm not as good at inspiring.
See, that's the thing. I think you're getting close to like sort of my answer to what that was. I guess there's probably been many, many games that I've played at tournaments where for whatever reason, I've just eliminated a newish player who was near to me at the beginning of the game. Obviously, there's been those games.
Sure.
And sometimes it's because, like you said, like that person makes a mistake.
Sure.
Sometimes it's been that I'm next to somebody who I already know and know that I work well with, and the new player isn't really offering me anything. And so I just eliminate, I just work with the person that I know is competent and that I've worked well with, and we kill that person. But those are boring, and the games that probably stand out to me the absolute most are the ones where I'm like, I don't know you from anybody else on the entire planet, and you and I just rolled the board. Like, those are my literally favorite games in diplomacy to play, and it doesn't matter if the person is at their first tournament or their 20th, and I've just never happened to meet them before. But, like, that whole experience of just, like, finding somebody that, like, you literally didn't know that morning and figuring out a way to, like, work with that person and also kill people that you've played this stupid game with, like, a million times while you're at it.
Yeah, it's great.
Best games ever. Like, those are the ones that stand out. And so I don't really know what my point is. But, like, my point is, I guess I'm meritocratic about it. Like if there's the person there and it's their first tournament and I feel like I can work with them, I prefer to work with them.
So do you think most people are meritocratic in that way?
I don't know.
Okay.
I think there's some people that will prefer working with the person that's never been to a tournament before because they think they can exploit that person. I've also done that. Probably a few times. I probably had an ally that I thought was the worst player just because, this guy's going to let me get ahead. We'll work well together for a while, and then I'll just sort of outpace them at some point, and then there will just, like, the board will just present that moment when I stab that person. And I've done that. That's also not my favorite game to play. Like, that's also not as fun for me. if the person just turns out to be like, and I can like rattle off 5 or 10 games that are still in my mind to this day that where that happened, like, and they're the memorable ones and they're the awesome ones. So that's me. I don't know if everybody else does that or if other people are more in the mold of, you don't do that.
No.
All right.
No, I will say that my preference is generally given a very green player, very new player. My preference is going to be to work with them.
Yeah.
Because either we get the scenario you just talked about, but like we roll the bowl together, that's great. Or maybe they'll screw up. I get something out of that. Or fun. I don't know this person. This is information I don't have. This person keeps coming back. I don't know this person. I have information about a bunch of other people on this board. I don't know this person. So I tend to try and work with the newer person.
If your choice, though...
Unless they're just awful.
If I give you well, a choice... Well,
they undo it to themselves.
If it's like, Eric Mead, France, Nathan Barton's Germany, guy Nathan's never met before, England. Okay? And I give you the choice...
Put him in Germany.
He's in Germany, you and I are EF. Yeah. All right. If I give you the choice, then, between competent German and incompetent German, given that you're probably going to try and work with the German against me anyway.
Yeah.
Which would you choose?
Well, obviously I'm going to choose as competent as possible.
You'd prefer competent German.
Sure.
Not everybody would.
Oh no, I would prefer a competent German.
Okay.
I don't really like that game. I don't like the under the wing sort of game.
Okay.
Where I like a game where I can give it. In this scenario, I like giving advice. I can do that. I can tweak. But like the people that are just totally lost and need you to write their orders, that's not fun.
Okay.
That's not fun for me at all. That's boring. Some people are really into that because they're rolling the game and they're stacking stuff up behind. They're
right in two countries around.
Yeah, exactly.
This is great.
I can't stand that. I don't like that game at all. That just feels like the person playing. While they might be smiling and having fun, sooner or later they're going to figure out like they didn't really do anything, and that's really ultimately unsatisfying.
Right.
It's certainly unsatisfying
for me.
I'm
with you on that.
I don't want it. I'm like, oh yay, I won because I had a de facto second country. Well, whoopty shit.
Right.
I mean, congratulations. You stacked the deck. So I don't like that game, but I like a game where I only have to give a little advice, which is why I'm leaning towards the competent rather than the incompetent.
Yeah.
Competent, just like you're gonna the likeliness is you're. It's not going to last long. It's not going to be fun, and you're just going to end up killing them.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no chance for a big game.
So I think this is something on which reasonable, experienced diplomacy players disagree, there's other people who, at least with truth serum, might have a different answer to that question, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. You definitely encounter people who just want to attack the new guy because they think that's the easiest thing to do, and they're looking for the path of least resistance. And bluntly, those players are also not usually that great either.
Right. And like I've said...
So watch out for that.
Also true. Yeah, no, actually, that is...
No, because I've definitely run into people who... Actually, that's probably a lot, really.
Yeah.
Who just kind of want to attack the new guy. And it's not because they're being mean to the new guy. It's because they themselves are kind of insecure and...
Right.
Yeah, they're not trying to be
looking
mean.
For the easiest thing to do and assume that's going to be it.
And they don't have
enough confidence in their own new whispering skills to say, let's work with the new guy and get a bigger result.
Right.
Well, it's cost benefit analysis. Yeah. You're really saying, like, given my skill set and this situation, I am more likely to end up ahead by attacking this new player, which is, at least for me, just not where I want to go.
Right. So just flipping it back over one more time, if you are the new person, and you're competent, don't think that just because you're new, you're actually at a disadvantage, because there may be people at that tournament, there will be people at that tournament, there will be somebody on that board who would prefer to work with a new competent player than a competent player that they've worked with 5 times.
Oh, that happens all the time, because, I mean... You often see players who will sit down and prefer to eliminate the people they think are stronger first.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, I mean, if you're sitting on the board and your goal is actually...
Your goal is solo. Yeah.
I don't necessarily want to, like, get rid of the weakest player, then get rid of the second weakest player, and find myself at the end of the game left with five less players. That is not how you get 18 dogs, right?
Yeah.
That isn't... So,
if you're coming in and you're new and you think you're at kind of a disadvantage and you're feeling like, God, these guys are way the heck better than me, that actually probably means some of them want to work with you. You just got to figure out who those guys are.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And the point is that you kind of have to be at least a little competent. And that's just one of those things that, like, you either are or you aren't, but like, definitely don't undersell yourself. Like, you're not going to be able to, like, if you're constantly misordering and you're constantly just not understanding the game situation, honestly, eventually they're going to cut you loose even if they want to work with you because they're like, well, we're not making any progress here, right? And again, like I said, I've done that. I've done that when I was worse at the game. I've done that when I was better at the game. I've picked on the newbie, and I've picked on the newbie because I felt like the newbie couldn't help me. But again, those aren't the games that stand out in my memory.
Sure.
The games that stand out in my memory are the ones where I worked with the person I'd never met before, whether they're new or just I hadn't met them, and it was awesome. And so plenty of people are probably looking for that experience, too. And that's always sort of like been my whole counter to when people are like, oh, these dudes all know each other and they all just work together. I'm like, no, because there's so many that would like rather, like again, going back to my first tournament, mm-hmm. I had one good game in that tournament, and it was when there was one guy who was thrilled that there was somebody who kind of knew diplomacy that wasn't any of these other turds that he was on the board with,
right.
And he and I like rolled the board together, and he was bigger. And that was fine. Like, he finished on, I don't know, 13, 14 dots or something. And I was at 9 or something, but he didn't kill me. And he didn't solo. And, like, we had a nice, cool score with somebody on the other side of the board. And we had a 3-way. And we stuck together the entire time. And it was clear that he was propping me up every step of the way because he was thrilled to have somebody who kind of knew the game that he'd never met before to kill all of these people that he couldn't stand with.
And, right, exactly.
And that was, like, my one good result in my first tournament. And I'm not saying you can't do better than that result, like being a smaller guy in a 3-way draw, because you can. But the first step is to make it clear that you're competent. All right, I've talked too long.
Yeah, you talked way too long.
Yeah
you kind of went on a bit, you're kind of tearing up.
I'm done.
It's good.
I'm done.
It's good.
Done. I had like 17 thoughts, and they were all in one sentence.
Well,
I'm out of thoughts.
That was so long that my thoughts are going to seem way out of context.
Please.
It's one thing that...
Take some time.
When Matt was talking about...
Some Gatorade in the shower.
I'm going to hit the showers.
Yeah.
The new player, attacking the new player thing, I think maybe I don't attack new players for that reason. My sense is that there are a bunch of people that just attack newbies, and that seems to me like, for that reason, I'm like, no, I need to work with this guy because everyone else is going to want to attack him. And there's like, there's something about that. That phenomenon does exist.
Well, and it keeps your options open a little bit too. It's there's something to be said for having the ally at the end of the game who I think I can probably take this here if I need to.
Sure.
If it looks like that'll work.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I had another thought that Eric drove out of my head with like just a lot of words all at once. They were really good though. They were good words.
I'm
liked
glad
it.
You liked
it. I did. It was eloquent. It was good. So new players, how are we doing on this? How are we feeling here? Do we feel like we tackled this issue? We feel like
keep going. We're short still.
I don't want to take too much. I don't want to beat a dead horse.
You have something else written down. Beat that horse.
there was. I'm really dawdling a little bit because I'm trying to remember what it was I wanted to say, but I was waiting patiently for you to wrap it up.
I'm definitely not going to know that. All right.
I'll go with the other thing that I wanted to make sure that we spent some more time on, which was the people really do want you there. And I really can't stress this enough because I think it allows you to, like, as a new player, to kind of shake off a lot of things.
Yeah.
Like, they really want you there. So don't sweat it. Don't think you're weird. I just...
Right.
I want to talk about that stuff, and I don't know. That to me is one
of
the most
important. No, and it is a relevant point because it... when... That, again, just going back to my own memory of like my own first few tournaments, and I said it sort of tongue in cheek about Matt and Nathan, like being like, "Well, we think you're the coolest guy on the entire planet," and I was like, "You do? Is it because of me or because of the fact that I actually like this game that you guys spend so much time like organizing tournaments for?" And it was both.
It was more the latter.
Yeah, yeah. But like obviously the thing that actually had Nathan like going wow when I first met Nathan was the fact that I had a bunch of people who I actually had convinced to show up at a bar and play diplomacy with like made up rules that were wrong, that we didn't really we didn't really know anything about the game, but the point is we got together twice a month and played the game at a bar, and that was like pretty exciting back then. Me having other people that might get into the hobby is really exciting. So just by being a participator, you're helping, right? And you'll probably get some people who are not just going to like give you dots just for showing up. I don't want to imply it way, but I do want to imply that like you have plenty of opportunities if you play it right.
And this just to address this idea that there's as we said, the phenomenon of just newbie killing does exist, but it's not a nefarious, it's not like a systematic thing that people are like, we want to execute this guy. And
lazy.
It's just lazy, and those people aren't soloing.
Let's stop and just take 2 minutes here and say, what are the reasons that people will just jump on you when you're someone that they don't recognize and they've never played with before? This seems worth doing. A quick list of don'ts.
Sure. They're lazy. Oh, why do they do it? Because they're lazy.
Okay. Because they're lazy, but not...
That's not the only reason.
That's
one of them.
Right. I'm saying it's not always... Like I said, there have been all of my games where I just killed somebody who didn't seem to know what they were doing. I do that?
People will do that if they sort of like make an effort to work with this guy and they just sort of cannot find a way to make it work.
Right.
I remember my God.
That's when it happens.
Right.
That's the biggest one when it happens, I think. Yes. That's where it's just like you and they can't find any kind of common ground.
Right.
And if you're being single-minded and you want to do this one thing,
that's
not going to work for them.
This can be for social reasons.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
Oh, right.
And this is the reason I remember my thought is because I wanted to talk about exactly this.
Okay, good.
Oh, I love that.
Everything.
So when
go
the thing that happens and the times that I do end up killing those new players, it's when you're so obnoxious,
right?
and you won't stop talking in the way you're talking, and it's just it's a personality sort of rubs you the wrong way, that
right.
sort of a thing. There are times, specifically the thing I wanted to mention was if you're gonna do anything. And going back to your competence, make sure that you do not screw up your opening. And do not have an opening that is bad.
Right.
Because that'll be it. And Eric was like, when Eric said, if you miss order time after time. Nope. One time. Your opening move. If you have
time.
A boneheaded opening move that's just clearly off the charts, we're all going to, everyone's going to bounce in Moscow. We're going to do a whole, we're going to shuffle everything around Germany just for giggles.
Yep.
No, you're done. Out. Can't do it. The whole game is just messed up at this point. There's momentum's gone. Any chance that I had of doing anything is just crumbling around me. Nope. Sorry. Definitely have an opening that is competent. That's, you know what we said, don't have a plan? Have a plan for spring 1901. Adjust it as the board tells you to adjust it, but at least have one ready to go for every country. Like, okay, this is minimally competent.
Yeah.
Do that, because if you screw that up, it's kind of over.
Go back to some old episodes of Diplomacy Cast. I think we probably talk about the most common opening move for every country.
We do.
Just do that one if you're not sure.
Yeah, and don't do the ones that we talked about in the April Fool's episode.
Right. No, don't do those. No, totally do those.
Hilarious.
I can't remember what it was, but that part was great.
But yeah, I wanted to just clarify what you were saying.
That's one on the quick list. You got one?
No, I think that's the biggest one.
I mean,
it's. I guess the biggest one to me also, if it's, and this isn't really like a new person thing, except that it manifests itself in new people a lot, is just the guy that's unpleasant to be there with.
Right.
If things are kind of not going great, maybe not everybody's attacking you, but you're sort of stymied and things just aren't working well and you don't have an ally, don't get weird and grumpy and moody about it.
Yeah.
Where you're just an unpleasant person to be there with. Because I cannot count the number of times that my only basis for who I got decided to go after was I don't want to deal with you. I don't have to talk to you.
Right,
right.
Right. I have to talk to the guy I'm working with, and I don't want to talk to you.
Yeah.
And
which
so,
kind of rules you out for the on the running of the position of me working with you.
Yeah, and honest to God, there's really fundamental, like, not to just... I mean, like, if your breath is really bad or you have body odor or something like that, that can actually be one of those things, too.
Pretty rare.
Just pretty rare.
Which is why we're mentioning it. But yeah.
There's a time or two that there's a new person and they smell bad and or something. And that's honestly, like, why stand out in that way? If it's your first tournament and you need every edge you can get, why not smell good? Right.
Yeah.
Like, or at least neutral. Right? So, but that, I mean, that's sort of a minor point, but like, yeah,
as
you
long as
seem to be having fun.
Yeah,
winning or losing, yeah.
Even if you're not really,
yeah,
pretend you are. Like it.
Right, you signed up to play a game. You just go through the motions. Go play the game. Don't sulk. Don't get mad. Don't have every time people meet up at the table say some derisive comment about how everybody's after you and like throw your pen around.
Yeah, and don't just
because no one you're not going to turn the boat around at that point with that attitude.
Right,
it's like, yep. Well, we have some momentum here. Well, we could keep going and keep old Grouchy Face around, or here's a thought: the thing we're already winning, we could keep doing that.
Yep,
that's what's going to happen.
Yep, and another thing, and this is more. I mean. Honestly, I know people who have been going to tournaments for years who still make this mistake, but also the thing where you just go into pure defense mode never works. That's almost a different topic, but just generally the thing where like something goes badly for you early on and you're just like, I'm just keeping my centers.
I'm just going to turtle up. I can't trust any of you. I'm just going to turtle up this whole time. No, I don't want to talk to you.
Yeah.
No, you lied to me. I'm not going to talk to you.
Oh, yeah. But do not.
You say that to? Well, guess what's going to happen then?
And what we're doing here is we're just listing sort of like new player characteristics or new tournament goer characteristics that we've all sort of encountered and we find ourselves. So just don't be that guy.
And
like,
most of the time, I don't know why I want to clarify this. This doesn't happen that often.
No.
Like, I've seen these behaviors, but it's not like most of the time. I would say 75% of the time, new player that is minimally competent, and I mean minimally competent.
Right.
Do an opening and then just move pieces around after that. That's all we're looking for. They're fine. Like,
right.
It's fine to work with. They're great. No big deal.
Yeah.
Not a problem. They start losing. They're cheerful about it. Like, the norm, if you're, the average Joe, new player, you're going to be fine.
Ooh, I have one more thing. I just thought.
I just want to be clear that, like, this isn't, like... this pervasive thing that all new players do. They're just things we've seen.
Yep. And I know we've said this before too, but if the game doesn't go well, you get there, your Friday night round, you just tank, which has never happened to any of the three of us.
No, never.
But let's say it's your first tournament and that happens to you. Do spend some time after the game asking the person who killed you why they did it and want to get better. Don't just go, oh my God, everyone's after me. Tomorrow's going to be even worse. The people who spend some time after the game and say, so what happened there? What was it that I did that made you end up coming after me and working with the other guy? Even if they're feeding you a line of BS, which half the time they are, something in the back of their mind. Matt described.
Well, I was just saying that usually people are pretty honest at that point.
Yeah, usually. Oh, yeah.
Once in a while if it's something weird, but usually they'll actually tell you.
Yeah, they usually will.
Why would your plan make absolutely
no sense is a fine answer to that. Like, you were suggesting this thing to me that I got nothing out of and you got a bunch out of it. Whatever. Like, people will tell you after the fact, and as an added bonus, whatever their wisdom and insight happens to be, as an added bonus, somehow I feel like, even if it's not after your first game, even if it's not after your second game, your first tournament, your second tournament, eventually, like, the diplomacy community hive mind sort of somehow through gossip or observation, they just realize, oh, this is a person who actually wants to get better at the game. And that is something that we all love.
Makes
so much difference. Yeah. Even if they don't think you're the greatest player since whoever the greatest player is, like, at least they're like, oh, you want to get better.
Because as we mentioned before, it's an opportunity for diplomacy players to be an expert on something. They get to teach you.
Right.
Oh, diplomacy players love to teach you things. Yeah. And you are a willing student. Yeah. Again, that's a huge bonus. That's why you stick around after the game, even after you got slammed. Stick around. Watch what's going on. You're not going anywhere. What are you going to go back to your room? Watch like a freaking movie on the TV? No. Yeah. Sit there. Learn what happened. Follow people after the game. And like... show a genuine interest, and it will be paid back to you on the diplomacy board tenfold.
Yep.
I mean, it's the best advice.
Just to be aware that even as you go from round one to two to three to four at your very first ever tournament, you're accumulating reputation, whether you want to be or not. By round four of the tournament, people are playing you differently than they were in round one of the tournament because they're like, what's up with that guy? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I played.
And every single round you got to, all those guys at those tables all said, do you know who that guy is? Oh, I don't know. Well, in round one, he did this. Mm-hmm. And round two, she did that.
And that happens more than, if you mostly just listen to the show, that happens more than it might seem like because most of the events you end up talking about are like these great big ones. But seriously, most of the actual tournaments you might actually go to that happen in your town, they're like 20 people.
Yeah.
They're also small. So, honestly, like, one or two of these guys you're probably going to actually run into again.
Yeah.
And so, that's kind of a thing if you sort of, like, stormed off after your first game.
Like, they're going to remember that or something.
Last night. Yeah. Oh, you're the guy who just, like, kind of stormed off. Yeah. Right.
Nope. And that happens, too. And by the way, if you're the guy who stormed off last night, everybody told each other about that too, probably.
Oh yeah,
that guy.
Everyone heard about that.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, because we're a game that rewards like some sort of efficient passive network, and we're also pretty small and lame, and we have nothing to do over drinks except be like, did you hear what Matt Shields?
Well, there's this small thing where the commonality between all the diplomacy players is talking about diplomacy and diplomacy players. I mean, it's what we talk about. It's what we have to talk. We might have similar interests in other places, but the one thing we can always talk about with another diplomacy player is diplomacy and diplomacy players.
So how's your wife? Okay, good. We're done with that.
Anyway, so that guy, round one, that was crazy.
Yeah.
Did you see he stomped off? Of course that's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
That's what you're going to talk about, too. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like you're going to go home after that game and talk to the two guys that, knew you were going, or your wife or your girlfriend or whatever, like, you're going to talk about the players. Yeah. There was one weird guy. He smelled bad.
Right.
You know.
So why not get a start on that and just... don't be that guy. Be instead the guy who's like, so, what'd you think about that game you and I just played right now? Like, let's talk about that instead. And that actually does have this weird little impact after the game where somehow the world just knows... Yeah. Sure. Oh, he's the guy who was interested in getting better after he tanked his first game. Great.
Stick around, hang out with people afterwards.
Yeah.
Definitely stick around, hang out. Start and talk about the only thing they know how to talk to you about.
Right.
Right? It's the only thing we know to talk about.
Right.
Of course we want to talk about the game.
We flew
obviously
halfway across the country for a weekend where we just do this.
Yeah. Yeah, we want to talk about the game. We want to go get a beer or a Coke or whatever people do, and we want to talk about that at game, and we're going to relive every little slice of this. Oh, remember that time with the thing with the double blood, blah. Yeah, and we're going to talk about it for three freaking hours.
Yeah.
So stick around.
Yeah.
We'll be there. It's fine. It's not weird.
And it doesn't take long before, I don't know what my point was. Yeah, you said it better than I was about to. So
yeah, I know. I was wondering why you were kind of stepping on it.
I was spent a half hour ago.
All right. I think hopefully this was productive. And you got anything else? Any closing thoughts, Mr. Shields?
No, I think that was it.
I want to invite the audience to give us any feedback if you think we missed anything.
Oh.
I want to...
I thought this was going to be like an improv thing. Like, I need you to think of a place and a style of theater.
I have this crazy idea.
Yeah.
No, I want to... This was an interesting conversation,
yeah,
and I think that it's a conversation that should continue, and if there's... You know, we're happy to do another episode, another little segment on this if there's a lot of response. So just drop us a line if you have some thoughts about your experiences as a new tournament player, mm-hmm, or your experiences as a player dealing with new players.
Yes, please. Especially
this is an important. It's an important
especially
topic.
If it was your first tournament and we got something wrong here, and you're listening to the show, that I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, this is unlike most of the things we talk about. This one's an important one.
Yeah. Use the Facebook page because people actually notice that.
Yeah, use the Facebook page rather than the email. Just do that.
Right. I don't, but, you know, someone else could.
You're no longer relevant to this interaction.
Yeah.
All right.
Final thoughts, Mr. Shields, Mr. Burns?
You know, I want you to get out there. I want you specifically to get out there and vote this time.
<All right. laughs> I vote every time. I voted. Oh, my God.
The real elections, not those weird elections that you hold by yourself. strange.
That's the real election.
I'm pressing the stop button now.
All right.
We're calling him.
Coming up next is Adam Silverman, a very special interview.
Yep.
Just in case we need that.
Deadline. Well, hello. All right, everybody. We've got Adam Silverman on the phone that we wanted to chat with him a little bit about one of the kind of big hot areas in diplomacy right now, at least the face-to-face diplomacy world.
Yeah.
Southern California, like we mentioned a little bit, they're kind of, you know, it's a little hotbed of activity down there.
Yeah.
So it's exciting stuff. So we wanted to get Adam on to kind of let everybody know what was going on down there.
Welcome, Mr. Silverman.
Hi, guys.
Thanks for being on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, I guess let's start there. Let's go first into sort of what's been going on in the diplomacy community where you're at. Just
Just give us an update.
Yeah. So, SoCal diplomacy is a pretty new thing. I guess we started up things in the San Diego area, I guess maybe 6 months ago or so, back in March or April. And around the same time, it actually was coordinated with another guy in L.A. who was interested in getting things going up there. So we've sort of had kind of parallel tracks going, forming new diplomacy groups both in San Diego and L.A. And we're trying to get some cross-activity between them, coordinating a lot. But, you know, the main goal has just been getting people out to play. We're doing it through the meetup group. And...
So how many games have you guys had? Well, how many players are we talking about? What's sort of like the nitty gritty?
Yeah, I mean, since April, we've managed to have a game about once a month or so. And actually, when I say a game, actually, for probably two or three of the games, we've had two boards worth of people. So the interest has been amazing. I mean, it's not really that amazing. There's like, you know, 4 million people in.
And we got 14 of them to show up. It's
8 million people in LA, 8 or 9 million people, and more than that in LA. I don't know what the population there is. So, you know, you'd think there'd be a few people interested in diplomacy, right?
So, I think so.
You know, so it's been pretty cool. It was actually surprising to me. You know, when I started up the group, I just went on to Meetup, put a group together. You know, the only person down here who I knew who played was Larry Peary. And this other guy, Jay, who lives in L.A., who had contacted me about it. And those.
Oh, yeah. He contacted us as well.
Oh, yeah. And so I'll talk about that some more in a minute. But, you know, so we put the meetup group together, contacted, basically started harassing all of the other board strategy gaming groups in the San Diego area. You know, and you start to get some people joining, you start to get some emails, people saying, hey, I've heard of this diplomacy, what's it all about? You know, and people, you know, it generates just its own kind of buzz. I mean, and I think probably people had, you know, it had been in the news from the Grantland and the...
I was just going to ask, actually.
Yeah, no, and we have had a few people who have come to the game and said, hey, you know, I read about this on Grantland, or I listened to the This American Life segment, and it sounded pretty cool, so decided to come out and check it out. So that definitely was positive press for us.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and we had our first game in April, and we had about 15, actually, we had exactly 15 people, and I remember that because I didn't have to play, which was...
Which is perfect.
Yes.
For you and for them.
Yeah. Right. No, I mean, you know, actually, I found that's one of the, it's actually helpful not to play, to be able to kind of guide games and, you know, take on more of a game mastering, mentoring role. So,
sure. Now, are you finding that some of the people came from online, or are they all just, oh, let's try this diplomacy thing, or sort of a mix?
You know, we've had a few people who have played maybe one or two games online. online. I don't think we're not finding really experienced online players.
Okay.
You know, there certainly have been some people who have played once or twice and kind of knew the rules from a little bit of online experience, but and it was their first face-to-face time. But a large number that are, you know, just brand new to the game, you know, and also a few of those, you know, people, you know, I played 10, 20 years ago in college and haven't touched it since, and it was great to see somebody starting up a club, and, you know, I'm excited to play again, so.
So that's great. That's, I mean, so that's basically just ground up, you know, like the starting from scratch and bringing them all in and showing them how. That's how it's done.
That's how it's done, yeah. I mean, you know, and you know, and the thing that's fun about it for me, in addition to, you know, is that when you put a lot of new players on the board, maybe a couple of people who have played before, but a lot of new players, you see a lot of funny things that you don't normally see, which is actually kind of cool. you see these weird things that, you know, as an experienced player, maybe don't make a lot of sense, but they're interesting, and they kind of keep you on your toes a little bit. You know, in the games that I've played, you know, you're playing Austria, and you're not exactly expecting Germany to pop down into Bohemia in 1902.
Right.
You know, and when it happens, sometimes it actually turns out to not be a horrible thing because they're keeping the best, you know, the most experienced player on the board in check. So, right. You know, so it's interesting. And, you know, we had a game up in L.A. that was organized by Jay that I drove up for. A couple of us from San Diego drove up for that, and they had, you know, about 10 or so L.A. guys. And we played, I want to say, through 1907. And for that entirety of that game, nobody got above six centers, and nobody even got below four centers until the last year.
Wow.
I mean, awesome. it was like C. Diplo. I mean, it was just a very weird game, you know? And so, that was kind of cool, you know?
I've actually kind of made the observation on the show before sometimes when nobody really knows what they're doing, it's kind of like when everybody really knows what they're doing, in that, like, the personalities kind of take over and it just sort of works itself out. A lot of times it just takes a lot longer because nobody knows how to efficiently kill anybody once they've decided to kill somebody. But, like, the people who are doing the best at negotiation seem to just persuade everybody else to just, you know, like, the result that you get at the end has more to do with the personalities, kind of like when you have a bunch of people who are all, like, really good tactically. Is that your observation too?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. You know, the thing that's kind of interesting is, the, you know, along those lines, is what we don't see, or we haven't seen in a lot of games, is the situation that actually you see with experienced players, which is where you'll have two guys who are going to kind of get together on one side of the board, and maybe two guys on the other side of the board, and they're just going to kind of roll things. And, you know, they might stab each other. We're not talking Care Bear Alliance, but, you know, they're going to say, you know, let's work together for a while, take the third guy out, start to move across the board. You don't see that very much. You see much more dynamic kind of play, because nobody really wants to work with anybody for more than a couple of turns in a row.
Sure.
So it's a really dynamic game, which is, you know, actually the kind of thing you occasionally see with more experienced players, but you don't always. And you know, I don't know exactly why that is, but, you know, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I guess maybe I'd speculate that, like, experienced players sometimes, I mean, if you really have a board full of, like, all really good players, then it can be dynamic like that in the same way that you're talking about. But the problem is when you have, like, four or five good players and a couple of suckers on the board. And that's what turns into those big, like, Care Bear Alliance grind fests is when, like, we kill the suckers and then we fight each other and nobody can make any progress because we're at a stalemate line, and we all know we're at a stalemate line or whatever. Those are, anyway, I don't know.
Well, it's really, just so we know, what is this, just a pet project? You just woke up and said, you know, there should be more diplomacy here in Southern California and I'm going to do something about it? Or were you inspired by anything?
You know, as you guys know, I was pretty active up in the hobby in the Bay Area where I lived.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Not his first rodeo, for sure.
Right. And, you know, and around 2010, after we hosted World DipCon up there, and I had my first kid on the way, I said, you know, I'm gonna step out of this for a while. I don't really want to do the organizing stuff. And I did that, and then I ended up moving up down to San Diego a couple years later and had not really had any plans to you know, actively seek out diplomacy players, you know, dealing with other things going on. And then, actually what led me to do it is, Jay, up in LA contacted me. Maybe it was through you guys, in fact. and he said, "Hey, I'm in LA. You know, we should get some diplomacy together." I said, "Okay, sure, you know, sounds good. Find six people and I'll drive up to LA and play." And then he said, "Okay, do you have a few minutes to talk? And, you know, I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on, you know, getting a club going." So we spoke on the phone for like an hour and a half.
Wow.
And it turns out Jay is actually a relatively new player. He had played a couple times online, maybe a couple times face to face, but he just had the bug and decided, you know, I want to do this. And that enthusiasm I felt kind of bled over to me, and I kind of came out of the conversation saying, "Okay, I'll try to do stuff down in San Diego. You do stuff up in LA, and we'll meet in the middle, and you know, see what we can do in terms of the Southern California." And I just agreed to do it, not really having any intention of doing that going in, and it's been fun. I mean, it's a lot of fun to meet new players and you know new people who are you know really interesting and just get people playing, having fun playing the game.
Well, it's nice to have that partner in a different city. It actually, I think that does a lot to kind of spur, maybe not really a rivalry, but at least a little bit of a competition where both people are kind of organizing and it's nearby and you have this other outlet. And, you know, back in the day, back, you know, 10, 15 years ago, Seattle and Portland kind of had a similar dynamic and that they kind of fed off each other. And, you know, hopefully that's going to happen for you too. That's really exciting.
Yeah, I think that would be great. I mean, and, you know, I think that, you know, the fact that it's, you know, we're reasonable distance apart so that we can go for a day game, you know, I think that's pretty cool. And, you know, that's happened already. You know, Jay's come down here for a game. I and another guy from the San Diego area have gone up to the LA area for a game. And, you know, we're really trying to get that cross gaming going. You know, who knows down the line if we ever felt like, you know, jointly hosting a tournament or something, you know, I think that would be kind of cool, though. I think that's probably a little ways away.
Yeah, I'd say so. I'm guessing it sounds like from the conversation you're not talking about it. You know, everyone's still kind of learning the game, sort of a thing.
Yeah, you know. I mean, at this point, you know, the goal is just get people playing, get people having fun. I mean, that you know, that's what it's really ultimately all about. If people, you know, if there seems to be a need, you know, or a desire for people to get some more competitive types of things in, you know, I'm open to that idea. But right now, you know, we're building up a base. You know, we're trying to get a core group of people, plus you know, as many people as possible who are interested in playing. And just having some fun, you know, in a more casual house game type atmosphere.
So to take that, just for anybody who's listening to this show who might be thinking, "Hey, I'd love to do that in my own city, but that person's name isn't Adam Silverman, and that person hasn't actually like done this already one time with one whole other different city and knows all the tricks." Maybe just a couple of the sort of tips and tricks from somebody who's been through this a couple of times now for like how to make and keep house games going and kind of like build enthusiasm for a hobby in your area.
Yeah, I mean, I have a...
Oh. You there?
I have a couple of comments on that. You know, I think the first thing is that that Meetup was a really useful tool, and you know, I started up a group and people just kind of started showing up in signing up to the group, and you know, I think it's important that if you want to do this, that you know, going through the Meetup route, you know, making a group, putting a group together for you know that has information about diplomacy and. You know, making an active effort to contact the people who join and say, you know, be welcoming, you know, welcome to the group, you know, looking forward to getting games together. And also, you know, most areas will have other board game clubs. So if you don't want to go so far as to, you know, making your own meetup group or for diplomacy, you know, there's other board gamers out there who probably, you know, some of whom are going to have some interest in diplomacy or, you know, show up at their events, bring a board, teach people how to play, maybe just play a year or two, you know, get people interested. So I think that's one big thing that was really helpful. You know, because I really didn't start with any personal contacts down here
right.
other than Larry and Jay. I would think that if, you know, for people who are in a reasonably populated area, I think you could probably have some success with not too much effort, actually. Okay. So, you know, people looking for games, I would actually strongly encourage you to try this route.
What about the sort of no-show factor? This is something that I think a lot of people struggle with, like, we needed 7, we got 6, no one can play, that kind of thing.
Well, I guess it hasn't been a huge problem.
Okay.
And part of the reason it actually hasn't been a huge problem is for almost all of our get-togethers, we've had more than 7 people sign up to begin with.
Must be nice.
Yeah, so the bigger issue we've actually usually had is, you know, what do we do when we have 10 people or 11 people or 9 people?
Right.
And that's not really a terribly big problem in most cases. Usually we'll pair people up, with new players. They're happy to be paired up with a more experienced player, and that's worked really well, actually. So, you know, everybody gets a little bit out of it, and, you know, people get the new players still get a good flavor for the game, but they don't feel overwhelmed with playing with more experienced people and that being really challenging for a first time. So that's always worked. So yeah, the no shows actually haven't been much of a problem for us, which has been great. I mean, we've certainly had a few, but never that it's put us below a full board.
It's just that Adam Silverman charm, I guess.
Yeah. Well, we've definitely had that, you know, and at least in Seattle, we've had that, 9 people show up deal. And I do think that the pairing people up is a great way of going, because it not only, you know, it solves a problem, takes away some stress, but it also, you know, well, at least in my experience, when 2 people are playing and they have to sort of work together, it makes them want to play by themselves more. They're like, oh, I would do this by myself so much better, but I have to work with this person. So they tend to come back wanting to try it again just solo. So it's a nice way of, like, putting the trick. Yeah, exactly. You're kind of like, oh, here's a taste. Come back for more. First one's free.
No, I've certainly observed in some of the times when we've done this where the 2 people didn't exactly agree on strategy. And actually, you find the 2 people playing the same country are yelling at each other more than they're yelling at the people who just stabbed them. So it creates kind of funny situations. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you that, you know, you get a good feel. You know, and also there's a mentoring aspect to it as well. If you can pair somebody up who sort of has a little bit of experience with someone who's brand new, you know, and it benefits both of them. So that's been helpful. Yeah. I think what the most difficult thing is actually in the actual running of the games, when you have a lot of new players, you tend to get a lot of misorders or a lot of badly written orders. And you have to kind of make a judgment call about how flexible you want to be with that, because you really want to balance, you know, teaching people the right way, you know, the right syntax for the game with, you know, not screwing them because, you know, they miswrote a convoy or a support order on their second term of their first game.
Totally.
You know,
yeah.
So that's actually more of a challenge. And, you know, on the second term, okay, it's easy to say, you know, we can give you a mulligan. Then when it's 1903 and they do something, you know, how do you handle that? And that's, you know, been one of the hard things for me is, you know, trying to get this balance between, like, you know, we don't want to be crazy rules Nazis or something, but we also want to make sure that people are doing, you know, getting the hang of writing orders correctly and not skirting that.
So one more point I wanted to touch on to kind of tie it into the rest of the episode that we talked in the rest of our episode about the idea of getting people how to behave at your first tournament or some sort of strategies for doing well in a first tournament kind of situation. So I guess the question to tie it in is this new group, are there some people who are saying yeah maybe I'll try going to a tournament sometime. Yeah, maybe I'd like to do that. And if so, any advice for him?
I don't think it's really come up specifically. You know, I try to talk it up in a casual way that, hey, you know, there's such and such tournament coming up or whatever. But I haven't really talked up tournaments. I'm not sure that, you know, we've gotten to the point where folks are are aware of or maybe that interested yet in kind of the bigger, you know, hobby in the country and in the world. So I don't really concern it with that because right now, you know, it's building a local group. I'm not really that concerned about the bigger picture, to be honest. You know, it would obviously be great if we got some players who were keen enough on the game and wanted to travel to some other tournaments. I think, you know, one big thing is, and I'm pushing the Bay Area folks on this, is, you know, they should, you know, I'd love to see the Bay Area do something, you know, which would be an easy trip for the SoCal people to get a few of us up there. And I kind of prefer to try to transition to tournaments in that way than just, you know, suddenly hosting something down here, because I think, you know, when you're going from a very casual situation to a tournament and you bring in people from around the country who are, you know, good tournament players playing at a kind of a much more aggressive level. It's not the same, obviously.
Right. In which case, your advice to them would be stick together, don't trust anyone you don't know, and just murder anyone from another city immediately.
Yeah, no, I think the point is, you know, for going to your first tournament, I mean, I think one of the mistakes that people make is that they don't want to trust anybody and they end up trusting nobody. And, you know, when you trust nobody, nobody wants to work with you, and you know, you make your demise a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I've seen that happen so many times with people, you know, in games where I've played with newer people, and I make every effort to work with them, and they just, you know, turn after turn won't trust it. And eventually, you know, you gotta say, like, okay, you know, we're gonna just, I'm just gonna work with the other guy because you're not giving me anything. And, so, you know, ultimately you've got to trust somebody. You've got to find somebody who you can work with. You'll probably pick the wrong guy a good portion of the time.
Yeah.
You know, but once in a while you'll pick the right guy and you'll have a good showing. And, but if you always, you know, if you always go in with this, I can't trust these people are, you know, crazy tournament players and they're never going to work with me. And, you know, it sort of becomes defeatist and self-fulfilling. And exactly. I think that's something somewhere you don't want to go, you know, just getting overwhelmed. You just go in there with, you know, with a good attitude and trying to have fun. And I think even good tournament players will pick up on that and want to work with you. You know, I think a lot of good tournament players do, you know, are happy to work with newer players. Just don't make yourself a target and you won't be one.
Well, you passed the test. You said all the same stuff with me, Nathan and Matt.
You're the real deal. I'm totally redundant. Okay.
Exactly. No, it's good. No, Adam, I just want to congratulate you on putting this all together, and Jay as well, who we've spoken with on and off again. And it's fantastic you guys have these meetups and that it seems to be growing, and we wish you all the best of that. If there's anyone listening that wants to connect with Adam or Jay up in L.A., just drop us a line.
Drop Adam a line. Somebody who checks podcast.
No, that's not true. Put it on the Facebook. If you put it on the Facebook, not only will I see it, but also the other people that look at the Facebook will also see it, and that will and we'll get you connected. But definitely, this is if you have any interest, these guys are looking for more players, and it would be fantastic.
Yeah,
I'll just add, or just go on Meetup and look up
absolutely,
San Diego or Diplomacy LA, or Google Diplomacy San Diego, Diplomacy LA. You'll find us. We'll be easy to find. So, you know, and you know, for anyone listening who hasn't played with us, you know, we'd love to have you. We really like having new players and people we haven't met. So it would be it's a pretty fun group. So I think. You know, anything we can do to just get more people playing.
Yeah, excellent. Well, we wish you the best of luck, and we will, I'm sure, talk to you very soon.
Appreciate it, guys.
All right, take it easy. Bye. You have been listening to Diplomacy Cast. Thanks, everyone, for joining us.
Wasn't it fun?
It was great.
I had a great time.
Yeah, definitely. For Nathan Barnes, I'm Eric Mead, signing off. We'll talk to you next time.
For Eric Mead, I am a giant 13-foot-tall chocolate banana.
I was just trying to sound like a radio guy. That's what I get. Bye, everyone.